In this week's Arts, I talk to Czech-Canadian documentary filmmaker Katarina Cizek, the director of Out My Window, a fascinating and highly innovative project that looks at the lives behind the walls of high-rise buildings in 13 cities around the world, from Prague to Beirut. The non-linear feature film, called the first 360-degree internet documentary in the world, is up for an international Emmy next month, and can be viewed on the website of the National Film Board of Canada. Kat Cizek told me more about the idea behind her project and how it all came together on a line from her home in Toronto.
Out My Window is part of a much larger multi-year multimedia experiment that I'm doing at the National Film Board of Canada, and it's called High Rise. So for 4 years, I'm really lucky to be investigating and trying to understand how the planet is becoming more and more urban. And so high-rise seemed like a very interesting way of exploring urban density. And so in the first year, we started research just looking at high-rise neighborhoods around the world. I had a team of researchers. And as the as these incredible stories of people living in high-rises around the world started emerging, I just had an idea one day, oh, what would it look like if all these stories, all these people, if we put them in one virtual high-rise online? And that was the simple idea for Out My Window.
How important a theme in the project is atomization, either of the family or of the individual in the different societies?
I think we're interested in built form and how built form influences our experience, our human experience of the city and of the way that we organize our lives. But we're equally interested in how people live and build community and create art and meaning and search for spirituality despite the built form around them. So I think it's about the tension between the atomization and this very universal quest for building community wherever we are.
At the center, of course, are human stories. How did you go about finding the different protagonists and the different stories? And what are some of the things that make them similar or set them apart?
We were really searching for diversity. We wanted, obviously, to have geographic representation and diversity, different kinds of people and different kinds of places. But we were also interested in this notion of a universal experience of something that breaks a stereotype of what, when you drive by a high-rise, you see, you know, often a gray concrete building. One looks exactly like the next one. And we wanted stories that would usurp that, challenge that notion. So every city, we ended up with 13 cities around the world, and we started off with maybe 20 or 25 in our initial research, and eventually it just withered down to the 13 that you see in the piece. But each one almost has its own unique story of how it came to us. Some of the stories, for example, in Prague, I was in Prague, and I was doing some research, and I came across this beautiful website of Silva Francova, who is a graphic designer, photographer living in Nizhny Miesto. And we began a correspondence. We actually began the correspondence when I was in Prague. Ironically, we never met face-to-face. And we've just we communicated over email, Facebook, and Skype, and phone, and we developed the story together. In other cities, we found, for example, an architect in Istanbul that did some research for us in some of the Gecekondu neighborhoods, which are these informally built, self-built housing projects in Istanbul. So each place had its own way in which we came to the story that you finally see in the project.
The aspect of there being a whole different world or a creative life beyond those gray walls, as you say, that's something that is very intriguing. For example, in the story of the Czech graphic artist, one thing that I noted and liked was when she described her own childhood, she talks about how children don't actually see the gray mass, that for them they find mystery even in between those sort of giant blocks, those large buildings. Do you think that your own discovery of the mystery behind there was something similar in a way?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I've had a few experiences of my own living for short whiles in high rises, And I certainly had that kind of attitude towards high-rises in my own city here in Toronto. We have the most high-rises in North America outside of Manhattan, 1,189 concrete residential high-rises in Toronto, which is quite phenomenal. But they're very they're pushed out into the suburbs, so you don't see them in the same way that you would in Manhattan. But I would drive by them, I would go by them, I wouldn't think that something exciting is happening inside them until I really challenged myself and began to explore this phenomenon and what a huge impact it has on all of us. So I think we have so much to learn from people, you're right, about the mystery and the potential of imagination and inspiration no matter where we live, and how that might impact the future planning of our cities and our understanding of the urban planet.
Just coming back to the kind of unexpected changes, I'm focusing a little bit on the Czech story because we are Czech radio, although I want to talk about the other ones as well. One of the interesting things there was the changes after 89, of course, in the south part of the city, in the south city. And you have different shots there of those little shops, for example, that begin cropping up. How did you collaborate with, say, that individual? How did you film the visuals if you never met them and so on? How did those aspects come together?
What is so beautiful about Silva and her father's story in South City is that they've been self-documenting their own environment for decades. So they have an incredible archive, literally thousands and thousands of photographs. And so we worked together, building some stories. You know, we'd get on the phone or on Skype, and she'd talk about what she sees out her window and what stories it reminds her of. And slowly but surely, we put some audio together. We did an interview over the phone, and she recorded digitally on her end. And then she went consequently and interviewed her own father. And they sent me the audio and some initial package of photography. We commissioned some of the photography, so it was original for the project, especially for the collage inside and outside the window. And then as I was going through the audio and editing these incredible stories, I would further contact Silva, and she would provide me with further imagery. So it was a really iterative, organic process, and I think this happened in many of the cities.
So that would sort of fill in with what you say on the website, that you're trying not to just see things here from above as sort of the documentarist who puts everything together, but it's really a collaboration.
Absolutely. We collaborated with over 100 people around the world, photographers, journalists, architects, academics, advocates, housing activists, all sorts of people from all walks of life who came together with various expertise and understanding of the issue and of the technology. I mean, we have 4 technology partners alone on the project who all came together with incredible contributions.
Explain to me, or explain as if you were telling someone who hasn't seen any of it yet, how will they be able to experience this project? How will they approach it? Because it seems to me, from what I've seen so far, that it is very democratic. It's up to you, really, to dip and dive into aspects that interest you.
When you arrive at Out My Window, you see a high-rise building with all these windows, and as you roll over each window, the inside comes into color, and you can kind of see a little bit, peek into somebody's life. And as you click, you have a choice to click on any of the windows. There's 13 of them. And when you click, you arrive inside somebody's apartment, and you can use your mouse to scroll around and explore their environment, both inside, and these are collages built out of hundreds of still photographs. A beautiful, beautiful photography, and it's built in a 360-degree game-like environment, so you just kind of use your mouse and scroll around. And every once in a while, you'll come across an object or something in the picture that highlights and offers you a story. So, for example, in Zanilia's apartment in Amsterdam, you're scrolling around, and you come across a large statue of the Virgin Mary. So you can click on that, and the screen is taken over by a short video, about anywhere between 30 seconds to 3 minutes long, that tells you a little bit, in the voice of the person, in the voice of the resident, something about their lives or the geography they live in, the politics of the space, and their own personal story. And there's 49 stories, so it adds up to about, if you were to go through everything on the site, it's about 90 minutes long, and that's why we call it a feature-length internet documentary.
And it's the first of its kind, of course.
that we know of, yes, this in terms of this using this kind of 360-degree game-like environment. And what's kind of cool, what I find cool about building something like that and watching users experience it is that it's something new in documentary online where the navigation, the way in which you actually move around the site itself, also provides you with content. So it's this merging of navigation and content, which is a new kind of innovation in web documentary.
It certainly is very interesting, even for me as a user. One thing I've noticed about myself, the more I use internet, is a certain impatience. So it's kind of nice to be freed up, to be allowed to really go exactly where I want at any given time.
Yes, and that's what's exciting for me as a maker, as a creator. I feel that this kind of digital space is like you said, more democratic for the user, where we're actually opening up space for the user to create their own story and create their own connections with things. And so really, you know, that's challenging for some documentary makers because documentary, not all documentaries, but some documentaries can be quite didactic, can be quite authorial in its in the voice in terms of telling you how things are or how things should be. And I think this kind of process is quite humbling. Understanding deeply how the internet and how the digital space works is more about a two-way dialogue. And I think documentary needs to open itself up to that.
Are the people who are profiled or who profile themselves, are they to any degree well known within their given societies, or are they lesser known, or is it a mix?
It's a real mix. It's a real mix, absolutely. For example, Amchak Gumpo, who's the musician, Tibetan, living in exile here in Toronto, he's quite well known within his community. He spent some time in India running a music school for the Dalai Lama. And he performs when the Dalai Lama comes to Canada. He often will open the stage for him, and that's, you know, in front of 20,000-30,000 people. And other, you know, the artist in Beirut, for example, I think is a quite well-known graphic artist and outspoken artist. Zanilia in Amsterdam as well is well-known in the European hip-hop community. She's the daughter of Boney M., who was one of the creators of... his name was Bobby Farrell, and he was one of the key members of Boney M., which is a very well-known disco band in the 70s in Europe. And other people are really just quietly living their lives who share also incredible stories of extraordinary magnitude. For example, a 91-year-old woman in Tainan who has retired to a nunnery, a monastery, but she every day or every second day goes to visit a high-rise for the afterlife where all her ancestors and her relatives that have deceased are all aggregated, and she takes care of them in this space. And so we learn about how death is being handled in Asia as a density increases through this very poignant and meditative story about end of life and the afterlife. In Sao Paulo, we meet the organizer and leader of a homeless downtown movement who have been instrumental in organizing spaces to live, taking over, occupying empty buildings, empty high-rises for people who have nowhere else to go. And so she is quite well-known in her community. But for the international audience, I think her story is quite new.
It strikes me that that's also interesting because some of the stories are more gentle, might not make it to the forefront of a documentary if it wasn't this kind of format, if it wasn't the glue that is holding it together is really this comparison of different people in similar situations with the high-rise kind of joining them. Some of these stories probably wouldn't be told. Do you think that that's the case?
Oh, that's a very nice observation. Absolutely. I think what the internet and the digital space affords us is to tell stories that otherwise might not be told in a linear, theatrical, 90-minute documentary. We all know that for a story to carry in that kind of environment, in 90 minutes on a cinematic screen, it has to be a certain type of story. Whereas I think what's happening on the internet, which I find fascinating, is this appreciation of everyday life that you often don't see on the big screen. You know, everything about the big screen is extraordinary and unprecedented and big and transformative. And you know, if you actually dig deep into the stories of Out My Window, they are also those things. But they're at a very, very different kind of scale and different tonality. And that's what I like so much about the digital space, is that it opens up the possibility to explore different kinds of stories that otherwise might not be told.
Regarding that, I couldn't help but notice that music and a lot of local sounds, whether be it children or that kind of thing, also play an important role. Is the music all individual as well, or was that something that was mixed back at the NFB?
The playlist is a phenomenal acquisition by we have a music supervisor, Helen Spitzer, who also is of Czech origin, actually. She's a fantastic radio producer here in Toronto. And she put together an amazing collection of sort of up-and-coming independent artists from around the world. We have dedicated certain tracks to certain videos. But if you look carefully, there's an option at the bottom of the screen called Playlist on the bottom navigation bar, where you can choose your own music. So you can actually change the mood of stories simply by changing the music that plays underneath them, which is a fun little thing that we did. So yes, the attention to sound in the project was a huge effort on our part to give it sort of an immersive and this feeling that the user is really entering into a space. And I'm hoping that that is how people experience it.
I just wanted to note one personal thing because we're almost out of time, but when I was looking at sort of the interface, the 360 space through which you move, I couldn't help but be reminded of some of the works of David Hockney with his famous Polaroids, that kind of thing. The way that you move through the space, it reminded me of that a little bit. I wanted to ask if that was also an inspiration.
Huge inspiration. In fact, some of his work, and he is cited in the style guide as a big inspiration for us in terms of breaking down, addressing how the truth in documentary, if you want to go on a more theoretical level, the truth is a collage, and it's not, you know, it shifts, and it's some things are hidden and some things are behind scenes, some things are doubled up, and that's the way we certainly experience one another and each other's stories.